Welcome to a new episode of Operation Gundog. We hope you enjoy it.
Back.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. With us tonight is Tyler Meaden. And for this episode, we will be talking about the HRC Upland Hunter Hunt Test. Tyler, for those that don't know and haven't listened to our previous episode with you, why don't you give us a little intro about yourself?
And for those of you who haven't listened, you should really go listen because you should really be checking out every single episode of the Operation Gundog podcast. My name is Tyler Meaden. I own a four-year-old Fox Red Lab named Mac. I run Gundog Outpost. It is a store where you can buy lots of gear for training your Gundog. I'm also the host of another Gundog podcast called the Off Lead Podcast. So that's a little bit about my backstory, and I'm sure we'll touch more on the Upland piece of it as we dive in here.
So Tyler, what exactly is the Upland Hunter Hunt Test, and what does the test include?
That's a good question. So I think if I break down the test, it'll help give an idea of what's involved, and then you know what you need to do, and essentially what's required of your dog to become an upland hunter. So the test itself consists of, or the way I break it down is into three parts. The first part is a walk-up. The second part is where your dog is quartering and flushing two birds. And then the third part is an honor for the next dog that's in line there. So those are the three pieces. It sounds pretty easy, but there's a lot more, you know, intricacies, a lot more details to make it really complex. For the walk-up portion, really for the entire test, you're going to be handling a gun. So if you haven't run, you know, the seasoned level HRC tests or the finished level HRC tests, I mean, haven't handled a gun before, that's something that you're going to want to do and you're going to need to do. You know, this is when I ran Upland, it was the first time that I actually handled a gun in a test. So working through those mechanics is certainly something you're going to want to do. And then the actual quartering as well, depending on, you know, the type of grounds that you're on, it might be easier to keep your dog in range. Might be harder to keep them in range, depending on if there's a lot of cover or not a lot of cover in your dog. They're required to quarter back and forth. And generally, the bird will be in some type of, like, pen type of contraption thing. And when the dog gets close, the judges will hit the button and the bird will drop out and then they're free to roam. Your dog needs to track and flush the bird. From there, your dog needs to be steady to wing shot and fall. So bird goes up, dog needs to, they don't need to sit, but they need to stop. You have to fire your gun. You have to fire a popper. You have two gunners. And they do not fire until after you fire. So, you know, the bird might be out there at 30 or 40 yards, might be out there at, you know, 30 yards when it flushes. By the time you fire and then the gunners start firing, the bird might be at 50 yards. Your dog is out there at 20 to 30 yards, standing there or sitting. And they have to do that twice for two birds. And then the honor portion is you get done after flushing that second bird, you come up. You sit there, your dog sits, you still have to fire the gun. You have to fire the gun in all three portions of it. And then instead of, you know, your dog going, your dog has to sit there and watch the next dog go pick up the bird that was launched.
Right. That was a really good description. And from previous episodes, we talked about the walk up in our second battle tested episode. For the seasoned hunt test. And then for our third battle tested episode, we talked about honoring. So I'm glad that you kind of ran through the whole quartering and flushing. So getting your dog to sit or stay, you know, whenever the bird goes up, are you giving a command? Are you blowing a whistle? How do you prepare for that?
So some dogs, you know, you can train for this enough where the dog just anticipates and knows they don't go. For me, I use the whistle. You can use sit. You can use a verbal command as well. You know, if you think your dog doesn't need a whistle or a verbal command, I would still recommend giving one because it's a test. You never know what's going to happen at a test.
You mentioned even on honoring, you're firing the gun.
Yes.
That sounds like it's even more difficult than really any honoring in any other type of hunt test, because typically they don't have that that stimulus right next to them. Mm-hmm. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's usually for the tests that I ran on the honor, the dogs are, you know, the bird is landing directly out in front of the dog who's up and who's going to be running the test. And then, you know, for me, my dog or whatever other dogs, they were basically like 90 degrees, but looking. And so it lands almost right in front of them too, at the same distance. And so there's, you know, probably 20 yards away. And so there's a ton of temptation there for your dog to break. And especially after you run through the other portions of it as well. It's definitely nerve wracking if you've never had to honor before, which for me running upland tests, my dog hadn't been required to do that under hunt test simulation or under a hunt test judging.
You so, also mentioned that, you know, it has to quarter and flush two birds. What's the, you know, how many degrees of separation do those two birds have? Because I feel like if I sent Sailor out in the field to go hunt something up and she flushed something and then retrieved it to hand and I sent her back out in the field, I feel like she would go right back to that same spot.
So that's a really good question. And I think that'll help like explain how most of them are set up. So imagine you do the walk up or whatever, and then you're standing at a field and there's like a couple of rows that you're going to be walking with. And so your dog quarters back and forth across the couple of rows, eventually flushes the bird, sits, you know, the gunners hopefully shoot the bird. Your dog, you know, the judges say, okay, you send your dog, they pick it up, bring it back to you. Then you turn 90 degrees and then the judges will say, okay. And then you send your dog. So they want all the tests. You turn literally 90 degrees to try to get your dog off of, you know, the path that you were on, the direction that you were on. And so that, you know, what you're talking about though, where the dog wants to keep going back and get stuck there, that happens. It does. You got to keep moving. And most dogs though, you know, eventually they start, you know, they pick it up pretty quick that, hey, we're going this way now.
Okay. So in that situation, you are moving with the dog. You're not at a stationary line and sending the dog off to hunt.
So you
without moving with them.
So your dog brings back the first bird. You will turn 90 degrees. The gunners turn 90 degrees as well. And then you start, the judges say, okay. And you send your dog and you start moving toward the next bird. And if your dog wants to go back, you give him a couple whistles or give him a hear command and get him pointed in the right direction. And once they start heading away from it, you know, the way you're training for this, I mean, this is judged at it. You need to have finish level control over your dog. So, you know, they should pick up on it pretty quick. And if you prep for this, you know, they'll know what they're supposed to do.
So when you mentioned finish level control, that does bring me to another question that I had. And for the average hunt tester that's running started season finished, where would upland hunter typically fall for those guys? Is that something that would happen before finished or after finished, or what were most people running on the test?
Most of the dogs in the test that I was in were finished. They were HRCH titled dogs. A lot of them were.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of guys that, you know, are running the grand, they will qualify, you know, their dog, they'll put an HRCH title on their dog, go run the grand, get through, you know, four series. And then between the fourth and fifth series that night, they'll literally train their dog to do upland that night, or try to train them to do upland that night. So they actually don't do it until then. There's a lot of people who say that, you know, you don't want to teach your dog to upland hunt until, you know, you've finished with blinds. You've perfected blinds, or not really perfected, be able to run cold blinds really, really well. And I was listening to another podcast, and Bob from Lone Duck was on talking, and he does the same thing. He wants his dog to be able to run 400 yard blinds, so he doesn't have them do any quartering work or try to depend on their nose until after, you know, they're through like a finished level, until they're a complete gun dog, essentially. For me, and this, you know, to answer your question, I think it's personal preference, what you want to do. For me, my dog had a started title and a junior title. And I had skipped running like the season level for HRC or the senior level for AKC. I had just taken the summer off. And then in the winter, I was like, oh, let's go run this. And so my buddy runs the help out. He runs his own training business. We trained our own two personal dogs for Upland just over the winter with two dogs. Neither dog had even run a season test yet.
Yeah, that was another question, was how exactly did you prepare? And I'm guessing that you had to have birds for that
kind of yeah, type of so, training. Yeah, so right? What we did, it was actually, every weekend, we would literally train on the weekends because, you know, the basic OB work, you know, training your dog, the remote sit to whistle sit, you know, it had all been done. All the foundations have been laid there. You know, I've been upland hunting and had taught my dog a quartering whistle. So he knows that when I give him two toots on the whistle, he's going to change directions and come back across. So that foundation was there. And then, so what we really basically did is every weekend we'd each get a couple of birds. We'd, you know, plant them ourselves and we'd go essentially run a mock test, and maybe not the whole thing, but we'd run the flushing portion of the test. And then maybe the next weekend, or maybe when that was done, we would also practice a walk up with a dead bird, and one of us would toss it and we'd blast off a shot. And I mean, it's a, you know, a very non-formal way with some of the stuff. Cause we didn't want to set up a winger to practice the walk up, you know, you can hand
right.
It's totally fine. And then, you know, practicing, you know, when the first dog's on, bring the second dog out, you know, and they get to honor each other too. So you got to practice every mechanic, every piece of the test. And we did that for probably 2 months. Every weekend for 2 months.
So you mentioned teaching that quartering whistle, you know, for Sailor. I already have her on, you know, one toot sit, three toots come back. So I guess luckily I have a quartering whistle room to yes. grow. But how do you teach? It seemed like you said that quartering whistle is for them to change direction mm-hmm. and start hunting in the opposite direction. How do you go about teaching that? Is that alongside with like casting? You just hit two toots and give them an over?
So you can do it. So the way I was told to teach it is with, you put your dog on like a 30-foot check cord and, you know, kind of go about it that way. If you're by yourself, it's a lot easier if you have a couple other people. So you're in the middle, gunner on your right, gunner on your left. You send your dog, they start heading one direction. Two toots on your whistle, you know, say the dog is on the right-hand side, two toots on the whistle, gunner on the left-hand side. Hey, 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 just get the dog's attention. You in the middle, start angling toward that handler, and the dog will start to comes across you. As soon as it gets to the other person, the left gunner, two toots on the whistle, right gunner. Hey, 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 hey. You start angling back toward the right, the dog will come across, and you just practice that. And so, you know, for me, I had gone to like a few group training sessions. And so there's a whole bunch of people and my dog picked it up really quick. Like literally.
That sounds kind
of, I think it was like two group sessions and he had to figure it out.
You know, that sounds kind of like a drill. I think it's Best Gun Dogs. He does pointers. I think I saw him do a drill a couple months back. I think he called it a come go with me mm-hmm. drill. And it was kind of like what you're saying with the check cord. You're kind of making them stay out in front of you. And once they cross your plane, you switch them back over and you pull them to lead them in the next direction. And once they cross your plane again, you pull them the opposite direction. Is that kind of what you're talking about with the
check cord? Yes. If you're using a check cord, that's essentially it. I didn't really use that. I only used that the first couple of times when I was working on steadiness, you know, teaching him to be steady to, you know, wing shot and fall so that I could control him, you know, when he busted in, you know, on the bird and I blew the whistle, that I could, you know, hold him and sort of reinforce exactly what I'm looking for there.
So you kind of mentioned that the whole point of this is for your dog to flush a bird. What happens if a dog slams on point or something like this? Is this a test not built for pointing breeds, or is there kind of a way to make it equal for those types of dogs?
It is not a test that's built for pointing breeds. So your dog has to flush the bird. You cannot flush the bird. So if my dog does flash point, now he's held a point for probably 10 seconds several times, and my buddy's dog is actually a pointing lab. So, you know, if he runs her when he's guiding with pointers, she'll lock up on point just like with the pointers. But with this, you know, the dog actually has to flush the bird. So, you know, if your dog locks up on point, you could say fetch, and they could, you know, dive in, or you just wait for them to dive in. I was worried if there was like a thick patch of cover, sometimes my dog will point and he'll kind of circle it and wait and stuff. In this case, you know, the test that I ran, the cover was so thin that, the birds dropped out of the little cage that they were in when the judges hit the little button, and they were running, they were off screaming.
Gotcha. So with, you know, him mentioning pointers, it brings me to another question I had, and that is, you know, for the average started season finished hunt tests, you know, 95-99% of those dogs are labs. So I was curious if once you get to the upland hunter test, do you see some other non-lab flushing breeds?
Maybe non-traditional hunt test dogs. The test that I ran had labs, goldens, and boykins. That was it.
I was curious if you saw more like spaniels in general in those.
Yeah, I did
tests.
Not actually.
Boykins makes sense.
But I would, you know, I think a spaniel could probably run an upland test.
Well, it could be, you know, a regional thing too, where some people just have right. more spaniels in general.
So, with upland hunter, it's one of those things that there's just the upland hunter title. It's not broken into different tiers or anything like the spaniel tests are.
Correct. It's one level. You have to pass 4 tests. You get 10 points for each pass, HRC points, which, you know, count toward your point total if you're going for a certain point threshold with your dog. And to add to that, gotcha. Like I don't know how it is further south, like for dogs that, you know, are going for the 500 point club. If you just run a ton of finish tests, a lot of guys up around me anyway, you know, they get the dog through finish, and as soon as the finish tests in the area are done, they wait for upland tests, and you know, you can run 4 upland tests in one weekend, so you can pick up 40 points in a weekend, right? And you can stack up a lot of points pretty quickly, you know, if you're going for the 500 point club. So you can pick up the title in one weekend. You can, yeah. Yeah, I did not do it in one weekend. I did it in 2 weekends. We ran a Saturday, like we ran 2 tests on a Saturday, morning and afternoon, which is really interesting. And then we just signed up for the test a couple weeks later. We wanted to just essentially make sure our dogs didn't break down.
So right. One thing I've noticed on different hunt test premiums, you'll see some of those dogs that are, you know, Hall of Fame dogs or 500 point or even 1,000 point club dogs. It'll say, you know, HRC age times 2 or something like that. Have you ever seen, you know, UH times 2 times 3 since it's so easy to get that time?
I have not. I don't think they do that.
Yeah, I've seen Grand Hunting Retriever Champion times a number, or I've seen Master National Hunter times a number, and in some cases I've seen Master Hunter if it's a, you know, just a large number like 70 something. I can't think of a time that I've actually seen HRCH with a number. I think that's, you know, a lot of people are getting HRCH over and over and over again to try to get up to that, you know, 500 point or 1,000 point club. But then again, I'm sure some people just put whatever on their dog, you know, as far as how they're advertising it, it might not necessarily be like a recognized title.
Sure.
As far as a number goes.
So, and you also mentioned you're handling a gun throughout this entire test. So, you know, there's gunners in the field. especially on Honoring, you have the running dogs handler with a gun, and you have a gun. Are all of these like the pump action standard issue hunt test gun, or are you bringing your own gun? Are they crackback guns like for actual upland? What type of gun are you
using?
It's
the classic Remington 870. And it is the hunt test gun. The gun. So the gun that I was handed for the first upland test that I ran was an old rusty 870. And we had trained with guns, but I hadn't handled an 870 for, I don't know, maybe I hadn't ever handled one. And that thing was sticky. The safety was sticky. Everything was sticky. And the first bird that went up was, you know, probably flushed at 20 yards. And I couldn't get the safety off. By the time I got the safety off and pulled the gun up to my shoulder, the bird was 50 yards away. So I shoot, and then the gunners start shooting. And they're handling their own guns. They bring their own guns. And they unload 6 shots at that bird. And it flies, you know, it keeps flying away.
Oh, God.
And then if they don't down the bird, the judge will say, okay, you know, bring your dog back. And you can just say, no bird, no bird here, and bring your dog back. And it is much easier when the bird gets shot than it is when the bird flies
right
away. Especially, like, the worst thing is when they miss, and then the bird is literally 100 yards away, and the guy has one shell left in his gun, and he feels like he has to empty it. So your dog has withstood, you know, 6 shots, including yours. The bird is way far away. I mean, they're jacked up and all. And then the guy blasts off one more shot. Boom! And you see these dogs just, oh, they, you know, if they don't break, they twitch. I mean, it's fun, though. I enjoyed running upland more than I have any other level.
That made me think of another thing. So we're talking about these birds that are getting released and running around and, you know, getting pushed up. What type of birds are they using? Are they like pen-raised pheasant? Are they chucker? Are they, you know, pigeon? What type of bird are they using in these tests? And does it vary?
It is pen-raised pheasants. They're all hens. They do not use roosters. And I'll go back to training, like what we trained with. We trained with chuckers, one, because they're cheaper than buying pheasants every weekend, two, because they're really good training birds, and then three, because they're really easy to plant, and I suck at planting pheasants.
What makes it easier to plant?
They're really easy to dizzy, and they're not going to get up and run a mile after you plant them if you don't dizzy them enough. So like pheasants, I say I suck at planting pheasants because I can't never quite get it right. You know, I will dizzy, and that thing will have its eyes rolled back in its head. I'll tuck the head underneath the wing, pop it underneath something. I'll be walking away, and its head will pop out, and you'll see it take off and start running. And you're like, yep, we're never going to catch that one. Yeah. Chuckers are smaller. They're more delicate, so you don't need to dizzy them a ton, and you can dizzy them just a little bit and pop them underneath something, and they'll hold there nice and tight. There might be someone listening who might have some tips on how to dizzy and plant a pheasant. If they do, please send them my way.
So you mentioned that first time you ran Mac, you know, everyone's just unloading on that one bird. Are there any other epic fails that you've seen or heard of at these upland hunter tests?
I wouldn't say fails. I've seen a lot of really cool things. You know, dogs do some really awesome things, or just handlers who are just so good. It's insane. The second weekend that we ran upland, we were going to run another morning and afternoon, and there's a pro there. He's got 12 dogs entered into each flight, which is the maximum number. And his dogs went 24 for 24. There was one of his dogs. Wow. One of his dogs.
They must have been working.
Flushed a bird, and the gunner shot it, and the dog didn't see it. It didn't see it land. It looked back at him, and he gave it a right angle back, and the dog took a right angle back 30 yards through upland cover and picked up the bird. I was like, that
man, that's pretty sweet.
Not fair. I am not that good.
Where's the line drawn from, you know, catching a bird while flushing it to being steady at wing? I'd imagine if your dog's in the process of flushing a bird and is able to catch it mid flush, does that count as being unsteady to wing?
No, that
That's like catching the golden snitch in Harry Potter. Like, game's over. Like, you've won. Like, you.
No. So there's the American Pointing Lab Association. They have like pointing lab tests and things. And I think your dog could. Nah, maybe not. Maybe they can't catch. They might be able to catch a bird in that test. You cannot catch a bird in upland test. If your dog catches a bird, you have to do it again.
Oh man. I hope you get at least some sort of like a standing ovation.
I was worried about that though too, because I mean, you know, on various tests and guidings and such that Mac's been on, he's caught birds. I mean, when he was 11 months old, he flushed a rooster. I didn't. Granted, it's at a game farm, but that sucker was 5 feet off the ground, and he leapt up and caught it out of midair. You know, like that's one, that's dangerous if you're hunting with people who haven't hunted before. But two, like, you know, that's not a good thing, because the more times you have to run through the test, the more chance your dog has to break down. So the minimum number of times, at least that's the way I view it, the minimum number of times your dog has to go through the test, the better.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Real world practical information as far as upland hunting goes, you know, I hear a lot of things about rooster pheasants just being some scrappy birds. You know, how scrappy are they?
They are scrappy. They are fun. You guys should really take a trip up to the Midwest sometime and come out upland hunting. Yeah, I think you.
Do you have an extra bedroom?
Actually, no, I don't. But we could figure something out. it is fun. They're wily. They're smart. They're crafty. You know, they are. There is a reason that they use hens and not roosters at upland hunt tests.
I always see the you know, the pictures on Instagram of the dogs with the mm-hmm. goggles. Mm-hmm. What are they called? Rec specs. And I assume that's pheasant hunting. We don't really have much of an upland season down here in Louisiana. I definitely don't have a pheasant season that I'm aware of. I wouldn't know what to think if I saw a pheasant. Maybe one got loose from a hunt test or something. But is your dog at risk for them?
No, you know, that'd be more like them in the eye and such. Dog picks up a bird that's wounded, you know, they do have spurs and they'll try to spur them. But you know, my dog Mac doesn't wear rec specs. He probably in like right now when the cover's still really thick. Especially for like guiding where there's like real thick sorghum, his face does get cut up. So it probably would be a good idea to keep his eyes from getting cut up, but he doesn't wear them.
You know, talking about rec specs, there's a pointer on Instagram. I want to say his name's Goose. He's got some rec specs.
Yeah. That's what I was wondering, if that was, you know, more for the bird or, you know, the cover just running through, you know, the crap that they run through and have a, you know, risk for injury, or if it's just because it looks cool in pictures. Both, I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. I'm sure it's, you know, just to keep the dog's eyes safe, regardless if that's cover or game or whatever.
Yeah. Rec specs, if you hear this, we're definitely open to demoing some of your products. So, I think Sailor would look pretty badass in a pair, honestly.
Do you think she'd keep them on, though? I don't think I could keep them on, Mac. I think you'd try to rip them off.
Let me put it this way. When Sailor went into heat, we fixed a pair of my old boxer shorts to her. She never gnawed at them. She never shook them off. First time I put a hunting vest on her, she ran after the bumper like it wasn't even there. I feel like I could put a top hat on her and she'd still run like, you know, there's nothing there.
All right.
That's funny. I put Bonnie's vest on for the first time and she turned into a statue. She went hunting in it the second time she put it on, but the first time I put it on, she was like, "What the hell is this? Is this one of those sweater vests that they have on the Pinterest Goldens?"
I think you answered most of my questions for this episode. I feel like I definitely learned a lot about upland hunting and especially the upland hunter test. John, did you have any other questions?
Man, no, that's really it. It is something that I would like to do at some point. You know, with my dogs, and you know, maybe now I'm kind of thinking after finished. So you know, I've noticed around here, when I say around here, within driving distance of me, if they have a upland test, it's usually later in the hunting season, say like November. So you know, maybe if we knock out finished this year, maybe try out Upland after that.
I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye out for some Upland Hunter test just to see when they come out and see if there's a trend, because I think we're a little ways off from running that with Sailor, but I'd definitely be interested to know when to be on the lookout for them around me.
Yeah, I would recommend it. It's like I said, it's been my favorite level to run. I thought it was, you know, HRC tries to mimic hunts, and I thought it was the most real life hunting type situation. And they do a good job at all the other levels too. But you know, it felt very real. It felt like a real little hunt.
I like that. Going on a, you know, upland hunt in general or a pheasant hunt is one of the things on my bucket list. So that would be kind of like a bucket list, I guess, there. Maybe that would make me.
Man, I kind of want to get into upland because I'm so used to still hunting either in a blind or deer hunting or something like that where, you know, I'm just stationary. I feel like it would do me some good to actually go out and try to flush some birds and walk around with my dog and get some calories burnt.
That is the good part about upland hunting is it's physical, which I personally enjoy too. And you know, you don't have to feel bad about, you know, having the cold beer afterward because you burned a bunch of calories chomping through tall grass or marsh or whatever.
Yeah. Well, Tyler, thank you again for coming on. We appreciate your time. I know our listeners are able to get something from this episode, and we definitely enjoyed having you back and learning about upland hunt tests.
Absolutely. Thanks guys for having me back on. Appreciate it.
I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. If you did, go ahead and leave us a rating on this episode. Ratings definitely help us figure out what you guys like so we can make more of it. So just take 2 seconds once you listen to this episode to go click one of those stars down below. If you guys can, just take a second. If you really, really like the podcast and want to leave us a written review, by all means, go for it. Or if you'd like to give us some feedback via social media, you can find John at Bayou Gundog. You can find me at The Puddle Hound. And you can find the podcast at Operation Gundog. We love hearing from you guys. If you have any input, any questions you want answered, any topics you want touched, feel free to reach out to us with those. Once again, we want to say thank you to all of our listeners. This has been a fun journey to get to do this podcast. We love seeing new listeners come in every week and reaching out to some people and finding out they've been playing the podcast for a couple of weeks. So we thank all of our loyal listeners and some of our new listeners if you're just now tuning in.